Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Freaking First Cut. Golly!
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your round three recap for this week's Pebble Beach Pro-Am. Joining me to break it all down, Greg Ducharme is here. Greg, hello.
Rick, I'm not sure what we're going to get so far. We may have already declared a winner.
This might be the recap episode.
This might be the recap episode. So some very interesting situations coming in with the weather. If you watched any of the broadcasts, you heard all about it. But that's going to be a fascinating storyline to keep track of moving forward after what was just a great day at Pebble Beach.
Yeah, like let's get into this. There's a lot to go through. We had a record-setting day by Wyndham Clark, who goes out early and just goes bananas and plays his first 9 holes at 8-under. That is out in 28. He then makes birdie on 10 and 11. He has a very bizarre 12th hole that we will get to, but bounces immediately back with birdies on 13 and 14. So, Greg, he is 11 under through 14. He needs to play his final 4 holes at 2 under to shoot a 59 at Pebble Beach. I was thinking chances are pretty darn good with this.
Yeah, the way he was rolling it especially. I mean, you look at what happened in that first 9, 28. And he made 150 feet of putts. Not round. There's no round in there. 150 feet of putts in 9 holes.
Right.
I mean, it's a 30 footer or a 40 footer at 2, a 30 footer at 6 for those 2 eagles. I mean, he was pouring them in from everywhere. 4 on that front 9. 4 putts longer than 24 feet that he poured in. Just absolutely incredible stuff on the greens, on a golf course that, you know, maybe the biggest challenge is actually making putts from, especially from short range.
Patrick McDonald, who I was just on with HQ with, dropped this little nugget. So Thomas Dietrich, Ludwig Åberg, Scotty Scheffler, the final group had 150 feet worth of putts combined on Saturday. I did not. I did not fact check that. But for the day, 3 guys, each playing 18 holes. That is what Wyndham Clark had on his front 9 on Saturday.
Yeah. Just incredible. As one of my good friends would say, sicko stuff.
Sicko stuff.
I mean, you see it. He shoots 28. It's just incredible. And that stretch from 6 to 11. Right. I mean, that's 5 birdies and an eagle all in a row. I know the golf course is soft. I know there wasn't any wind and we were expecting to get it, but I mean, these are some tricky little green complexes here, right? It's not easy to be pouring in all these putts. It may be easy to hit it where you're looking, maybe easy to hit it close to the hole at times, assuming you can control the spin. But it's just not that easy to fill it up the way he did at Pebble.
The final 3 holes where we are on full out 59, maybe 58 watch. On 16, he hits it to 10 feet, 6 inches, leaves that putt 2 inches short. 17, he hits it to 14 feet, 4 inches, leaves that putt, I don't know, 3 inches short. And then his eagle putt on 18 from 26 feet, 5 inches, leaves that one about 4 inches short. I don't know about you, Greg, but I think it is criminal to leave a putt for 59 short, let alone like three in a row to get there.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I understand. It's 26 feet on 18. An extremely slow putt uphill. I know he's not trying to lag it up there when that comes up short, right? So it, like, they're all understandable in their way. From 14 feet at 17, you don't want to leave that short. And from 10 feet on 16, that's really the one that you don't want to leave short.
Yeah.
So that's a little disappointing. He did say after he wasn't thinking about 59 until he stood on 18T. But I think you got to know. You got to know. You got 10 feet for birdie at 16. You got to be thinking, okay, this is.
Dude, even if it's a putt for, even if he's even par from 10 feet on 16, don't leave it short.
Yeah, you don't want to be leaving it short from 10. It's understandable because they're so slow. And you can hit like a lot of putts come up short today.
Yeah.
But with all that on the line and his aggressive nature throughout the day, although a lot of the putts he did make dripped over the edge. We watched that highlight reel. I mean, they were kind of, some of them looked like they were going to come up short and stretched. So I see what you're saying, and I agree to an extent, because my thought was at 18, you got to get this there, because you know it's going to be slow, but you got to make sure this gets there.
You watched Scotty Scheffler leave one short on a similar line on 18.
Yeah, yeah.
Or was it Scheffler or whoever it was he was playing with? It wasn't Scheffler. It was Højgaard, I think.
I think that's right.
Because they were in a different group. I'm you know, obviously. Phenomenal round. We're mostly playing fun here with Wyndham Clark. I want to talk about the 12th hole. So the first time he misses a green, he hits a woeful shot on the par 3 12th that plugs into the greenside bunker. He has to extract it and it kind of just teeters towards the other bunker. And then he hits a shot left-handed, Greg. So just to describe the chaos that was this round, he goes eagle, birdie, 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 and then has to hit a shot left-handed.
On a par three. On a par three. Yeah, he's 10 under.
Yeah.
He's sitting on 12 at 10 under, hitting one left-handed.
Has to be the first time in the history of golf that's ever happened.
Yeah, it's remarkable. I don't know where the shot came from at 12 to hit it into that bunker, to plug it into that bunker. It's out of nowhere. I guess you understand. I mean, he had to hit it left. I understand why he hit it left-handed. That's not in question at all. And then he makes it. He gets it up and down.
So he makes a 25-footer from the fringe with his putter that does not even count for the putting stats. So there's another 25 feet. There's another however many strokes gained that is. It doesn't count for him. It's based, that's a zero putt hole. And honestly, that bogey probably feels like a birdie in that moment with the escape that it was. A plugged lie, a left-handed shot, and then he rolls in a 25-footer to get out of there.
Yeah, a double breaker, right? Cruises that in there. And that was another one. It went in with perfect speed. And I like how he said to keep the round going.
Yeah.
Which sure. It's such a funny, like you're 10 under. And you don't want to make double after that. That boy, would that be disappointing?
Yeah, you'd only shoot like a 63.
But it was a big momentum saver, and he answers the call on 13 and 14 with, I mean, the shot he hit into 13 was awesome. Not easy to get it close to that hole location. Another one of those wedges. He had a couple of these where he's coming out of the rough, like on 11. Another birdie that he made, and then hit such a cool third shot at 14, running it up the hill from the bunker there on those soft greens. That was really cool. Really hard to do. And he hit it to 4 feet and knocked that one in. So really remarkable stuff out of Wyndham today.
If it was not for Wyndham Clark, this would be the Jason Day show, because Jason Day shot a 63. Jason Day beat everybody else in the field, not named Wyndham Clark, by two shots, and Day lost to Wyndham Clark by three strokes. I mean, just two guys with some outlier days, and it was Jason who got off to a great start, four birdies in a row, one through four. He was four under through six, but he made five birdies through that stretch. He holes out from 124 yards on 11 for eagle, gets a couple more after that. This place has been obviously a friendly confines for Jason Day over the years. And this was a look back in the time machine.
Yes. But you know, oftentimes I've equated a lot of Jason Day's success here at Pebble Beach to a really, really good short game and being really solid on the greens, which he was today. He was really solid in those short range putts. But just for comparison, I mean, think about that. There's a big difference in the way these two players hit the ball today. So Wyndham Clark, 190 feet of putts made. And if you want to add that 25 feet to it, you're talking about 205 or whatever. Excuse my math. You know, over 200 feet of putts made. Well, Jason Day lost by three and made 65 feet of putts today. So he hit the ball so well. A lot of these wedge shots were really close to the hole, especially in the early going, taking advantage of one through six, kind of a unfortunate bogey at five there. But really, really good stuff out of Jason Day, tee to green, which is a little different than the way he typically does it here. And I think his iron play has started to come around the last couple of years, maybe a little up and down later in the season last year, but boy, was it on full display today.
Yeah. So those were the two big movers. Wyndham Clark up 22 spots now in a solo first, 17 under par. Jason Day up 28 spots now in a tie for six, four shots off the lead. We still have to talk about some of the bigger names, the guys that are in between those two, but we're going to do that after a quick word from our partners.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
And we're back. Okay. Whew. Wyndham Clark, 17 under. Jason Day, 13 under. There are some names in between. Let's start with Ludvig. A 67 to go with his 68 on Thursday, his 65 on Friday. This 67 was bogey free. It was pretty clinical. I think this dude, like, he's relentless. He's good. He makes the most out of everything. He's one shot back, Greg, and we haven't seen the low one yet.
No, that's the scary thing. Like, what did he do today? It didn't really feel like much of anything. This is the easiest 67 you've ever seen. It was not explosive looking or jaw dropping until you get done. You look at the card and say, okay, well, he didn't make any mistakes, right? There's the, you know, he leaves two par fives out there with both 14 and also number two. He doesn't take advantage of those, and it's still a 67, really easy looking. Some really good wedge play. A short game, I think, is underrated. You maybe worry about the putter a little bit from time to time, but that seems to be a recent thing. And you could very easily blame the greens, this grass type, which everybody's been struggling with. And relative to the field, his putting really hasn't been all that bad. I mean, he led the field yesterday in strokes game putting, getting a couple long ones to go. But today was right, you know, lost about a half a shot on the greens and shot 67 and is one shot off the lead. He's a scary guy to have behind you.
Apparently, a new scary guy to have behind you is Matthew Pavone, who wins last week, Greg, and now, again, kind of under the radar, heading into a final round, two shots off the lead, keeps himself in the mix. He has found something. I don't have the exact numbers off the top of my head, but he basically played 200 worldwide events before he won anywhere. And now he's won twice in his last 10 or so starts. So I don't know what he's found, but I'd like to learn about it.
Yeah, it's really good stuff. He's got his shot shape under control for the most part. It seems like in every round, there's a wild one to the left with an iron shot for him, which he did hit today at number five with his only bogey. But other than that, he really threw some darts today. The putting has been really good. Seems like every once in a while he's good to miss a couple of short ones. Again, maybe that's just the quality of the grass type. But ultimately, when I look at Matthew Pavone, I'm thinking this guy just won't go away. You almost have to go back to yesterday where he's at Spyglass Hill. And it doesn't get a lot of attention, but he shoots 38 on his front nine, makes a double on his ninth hole, and is at five under for the tournament and turns it around, makes four birdies on his back nine, the front nine, and then comes out today and goes and fires a 66 and made a couple bogey at five and eight out here today with a couple left misses approaching the green. I think maybe eight wasn't a left miss. I know five was. Eight was too. Yeah, he missed it. Missed his approach shot left on eight as well, where that cut doesn't really cut. And that can get him into a little bit of trouble from time to time. But he won't go away. He continues to bounce back and answer with birdies. And looking at a really difficult forecast for tomorrow, if this round gets played tomorrow or Monday, you can't count this guy out because he's tough and he's kind of proven himself to be a little bit of a mutter who I think has a lot of different avenues, a lot of different ways he can win a golf tournament.
Yeah. Color me impressed with the way that he's been playing, not just the last couple of weeks, but really last 10 or 12 starts. It's been really good stuff. Couple of bigger names, Justin Thomas, Scottie Scheffler, both sitting in a tie for sixth. They're both at 13 under par. They are both four shots off the lead. Let's start with JT. It was a four under 68, another bogey free round. You talk about taking advantage of the par fives. He did it on the front. He did not do it on the back nine. He played his final 12 holes at one under, 11 pars and one birdie. The lone birdie came at the 15th hole. have been on the record far and wide that I think JT is just ready to rock and roll in 2024. And here we are again with him near the top of the leaderboard.
And this is Justin Thomas of old. Exactly. Right. He's in position. He's doesn't seem to be getting everything out of his round that he can, but playing very well and right in contention. He's missing some putts to the right. You could see it jumping off the blade to the right at times. And a lot of putts hanging right around the edge. You know, a lot of hand gestures out of JT on the greens, which, look, that's a welcome sign compared to what we saw last year. So he is back in that kind of groove. And as putts start to fall for him, whenever they do, whether it's tomorrow, whether it's, you know, in May at the PGA Championship or at the Players, he's going to win because his game is right there. It's that good. He's got plenty of shots. You just want him to keep things simple. But I want to bring up one other thing about JT. Mm-hmm. Remember that round at the Players Championship and you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, the one where it was just absolute nasty. And he shot like a 66 in by far the worst conditions of the week.
Opposite side of the draw. Yes. Everybody's firing off open championship predictions.
Yep.
You might have that kind of situation tomorrow at Pebble Beach. And it'd be really cool to see him make a move in conditions like that.
He has been. There's been a couple times where he's put it together in really nasty stuff and been the outlier in a positive way. So I'll be interested to see the opposite from Scottie Scheffler, who maybe it's the footwork. I think that's the easy excuse. Maybe it's just a small sample size, but when it's kind of wet and nasty, he doesn't play his best. A 2 under 70, which is a stroke worse than the field average. And this was just a lot of loose play from Scottie. He didn't drive it particularly well. You know, he always looks off balance, and maybe it's exaggerated because when he's moving around, he's also slipping. I mean, the ball's long gone off the club face, so maybe it doesn't matter, but it was just a tough watch for Scottie.
Yes. Now, look, this is something one of my old bosses used to tell me. If you have a great looking golf swing, you can play poorly and people say, oh, he had an off day. You know, when your footwork's all over the place like that, it's wet and the results don't show it, it all of a sudden looks like a problem. So I don't think that's a real issue for Scottie. But I understand your point. I think back to the PGA Championship at Oak Hill, where that Saturday round kind of clipped him. But I'm wondering more if this is a Saturday issue for Scottie than it is a conditions issue for Scottie Scheffler. So it was his worst scoring average of any round last year. We've seen it a couple times this year already. Slow Saturdays have kind of halted his progress in these tournaments. But still, he had 15 greens today. He's eighth in strokes gained approach the green. And the issue still seems to be on the greens. I mean, he missed 3 putts inside of 7 feet. Those 3 go in. It's 67, and Scottie Scheffler finds himself one shot off the lead, doing nothing. So the issue is still, this is largely still the same, even though some of the tee shots didn't look as automatic today.
Okay, fair enough. You mentioned conditions. Let's talk about the conditions before we get to the betting favorites, because I think this is pretty relevant. So there's this great tweet from Keith, my buddy Keith Stewart's on site. Is this from his Read the Line Twitter handle? So Gary Young, who is the chief referee for the PGA Tour, has described what the plan is moving forward to the media. So they are going to get out there very early on Sunday morning, 5 a.m. Pacific time, and they're going to make a determination one way or another and alert players at 5:15 in the morning. They will either say you're good to go at normal tee times, which will be 2.5 hours later. It'll be 7:45 local, or you are going to get another update at 9:30. So they're not going to do the hourly updates. They're going to give an update at 5:15. And if they need another one, it's going to be at 9:30. if they go into Monday, if they are required to go into Monday, they have to start by 10:15 to have enough daylight and enough time to finish the round. If they cannot do that, if they cannot start by 10:15 on Monday, it is a 54-hole event. That is the plan.
And it's a very understandable plan. I mean, so what do you think this outcome looks like? I just want to read to you this real quick, this report for tomorrow. This is, well, you can be the judge of this.
Okay.
Moderate to heavy rain and strong winds to be expected to start the day Sunday. South-southeast winds of 30 to 35 miles per hour, gusting to 60 miles per hour will be likely. The rain will decrease to showers and isolated thunderstorms during the mid to late afternoon. Sounds like good news. With wind decreasing, also good news, to 25 to 30, gusting to 50 miles per hour. So that's our decrease. There's going to be a wind decrease to 50 miles an hour when it comes to gusts. That is very dangerous circumstances. And
so dangerous that there will not be spectators on Sunday, by the way, even if they do.
You can't have that. There's no way you can have that. There'll be stuff flying around all over the place. All over the place. You're talking about floods. It's a total mess. So I don't know, unless we get fooled by the wind, right? And that calms down dramatically. I don't know how tomorrow happens.
I'm actually on team, not on team. I don't want this to happen, but I think if you made me lean on a side, I think we're done playing. Because here's the way that I see this. Right. If this forecast comes true, which is obviously the huge caveat, there is no chance they play on Sunday. There is just no, out of player safety, there is no chance they play on Sunday. So now you've got to play on Monday. Okay, fine. Well, we know that that they have to be off by 10:15 in the morning. So that gives them, by the time the sun comes up, maybe 4 hours to get this course ready to play on Monday. This course is already saturated. They are supposed to get an inch of rain tonight, Saturday into Sunday, and potentially another 2 to 3 inches on Sunday. I don't know where 4 inches of rain is going. I mean, if anybody in the world can do it, maybe it's the grounds crew at Pebble Beach, but I don't know where 4 inches of rain is going in the few hours that they will have to get this course ready.
Well, it's not going anywhere. There's no...
Put it in the ocean. Just dump it in.
They were saying yesterday the course can't take any more rain.
Correct.
You know, it's... And they didn't get any wind. It was hoping that they'd get some sun and wind today to help dry it out a little bit. And the wind just didn't blow.
Every single ball, every ball, no matter what club it was, no matter whether it was landing in the rough, the fairway, the first cut, was like completely underground when it landed.
Yeah. Disappearing. It kind of made it hard to follow most of the, you don't see a ball bouncing and rolling, right? You see a ball disappear.
The camera just pans.
Yeah.
Somewhere. Okay. Over
here. Right. Nobody seems to be reacting too much. So it must be in the fairway. And I don't mean in the fairway left to right. I mean, in the fairway physically.
Right.
Buried into the fairway.
I also think so. This will not impact the PGA Tour's decision, nor will it impact CBS's. But the fact that, like, the Super Bowl is next week, and they're like half of the cameras and like half of the camera operators have to be at the Super Bowl next week, and we know they're not even entertaining a Tuesday. Like, it's either Monday by 10:15 or this is over.
Yes, I'm not sure why the Super Bowl would have anything to do with our golf tournament.
I think you'd be surprised.
Yeah, they may have a little bit of pull over there.
I just think, and I hope I'm wrong, right? I hope that they've got a way to get this thing ready for Monday. But man, the forecast is not pretty.
No. And you're fighting it on two fronts, right? I mean, 60 mile an hour winds. I don't think it's really feasible to understand what that feels like.
Right.
You know, what that actually is. I mean, you probably misjudge what a 10 mile an hour wind is. You definitely do with your club selection. You know, that's not a one club wind. 10 miles an hour is a two club wind. So usually your perception of wind is low. Your guess is going to be on the low side.
I just learned my problem. Yeah. I never would have thought that was a two club wind.
Yeah. Yeah. You need two from two and 10. But at 60, it's just unfathomable. And then if that doesn't happen, it makes the other side even worse, which is all the rain that you mentioned.
If 10 miles an hour is a two club wind, is 60 miles an hour a 12 club wind?
I don't even know. I don't even know what you would do. Your physical body is going to be moving around.
Right. Yeah, you could not actually stand there and swing.
That's what I'm saying. It's very intense. And then the ball's going to stay on the green. I know the greens are slow, but it's a 60 mile an hour wind. It's going to blow tree limbs off. It's going to also blow a golf ball that's on a green.
Let's see the betting odds. Might be over, but if they play 18 more holes, this is what Vegas has to say about it. Wyndham Clark is the favorite at 2-1. Ludvig Åberg plus 210, 850 plus 850 for Matthew Pavone, and then Scotty Scheffler at 11-1. I guess if we assume they're not going to play Sunday, conditions on Monday will be wet, but like they're much better, like wind wise. So I don't expect that if they do play Monday, it'll be crazy windy or anything like that. It'd be just a relatively wet day. So we have to make a lot of assumptions here, Greg, but is there something there that stands out to you?
Well, there's something not there that stands out to me.
Okay.
And that would be four shots back. It would be Tom Hoagie.
35 to 1.
So I really like that number. I think it's long. He's playing really well. Loves the golf course. Has won here before. He's hitting his irons great. I really like the number on Pavone as well.
I agree with that.
That seems to be, you know, look, Wyndham is fine. Ludvig is fine, but they're a little tight up there at the top right now. So the Pavone number, fascinating to me. The Hoagie number, very interesting to me. And I'm also not afraid of the Jason Day number. He's four back as well, but hitting the ball so well. I think that could really carry over. Now, that's kind of the Monday concept. Mm-hmm. Anybody here? JT is probably the guy you're thinking of if it's blowing 40 miles an hour. If it's a lesser version of what the forecast is and we get 40 mile an hour winds, you know, who can handle that?
Yeah. So if they actually do play in something like that, I'm just going to go find somebody at like 35 or 50 to one and just be like, let's go chaos style.
Yeah.
And do this. But I agree that if like you made me actually pick somebody, we have seen Justin Thomas defy logic and reason in some of those situations before, but I would start thinking it would be like that final round at Torrey where Snedeker, and it's just like everything is sideways.
Right. And I guess in that case, the guys I really like would be at 11 under, and that's Justin Rose and Keegan Bradley. I like them in conditions like that. I think they're equipped to handle it. They're just six back. So they may be some guys you go grab to embrace the chaos as well.
Josh, grab this comment from Paul. It says, can I put 5K on Clark right now? So I did this, not 5K because I couldn't get that much down on the limit. But so I just went and bet Wyndham Clark at 2-1 in case this thing's over. in case it's over. Now, I'm assuming that will be voided out. I think it's going to depend on when you place that bet. You know, if no golf gets played after you placed it, I think you'll probably get voided, which that's fine. I'll just take my money back or whatever. I think there's a chance that they sleep on it and they pay it out anyway. But also, I think it depends, right? So like I placed it, Greg, when Ludwig was on the green. So, I mean, technically golf was played after I placed it, but I guess every place is going to have different rules. They're going to interpret them differently, but I do like where Paul's head's at, because I think that there's a chance that no more golf is played.
Yes. But I mean, you may look, I don't know if 5K is a big deal to you or not. That's your own discretion, but it's not like you don't put your mortgage on Wyndham Clark, right? Just because you might not be played. Well, it might be played.
Yeah.
And he might not win.
It definitely might be played. So like the scenarios are, yeah, you might just get your money back. You might win. You might have to have him play and you might win, or you might lose it. Like they're not like all perfect outcomes.
This is not automatic. But I don't hate the idea that you had, right? Getting in there a little early. It's a really nice play. You're lucky Ludwig didn't make that putt.
I know, but because I thought about it was probably going to be voided anyway, but I was thinking if there is a rule about this, I do want to get it in before the round's over.
Right.
So I did kind of took a calculated risk that he wasn't going to make that, whatever it was, 30 footer or whatever.
Yeah. And that happens. Hey, you get your 2-to-1 money on it, which is great.
Right. Yeah. And the other thing is like, okay, then I just have Wyndham Clark at 2-to-1 and maybe he wins and maybe he doesn't. I've lost bets before. I'm going to lose bets in the future. Like, well, yeah. Like, it's not that big a deal.
Yeah. But it's not the mortgage, because right. It's not automatic. That's the one thing I'm trying to make very clear.
Yes,
here.
It is not the mortgage. Let me be very clear about that. Yes. It's as always, it is what responsible gambling would be, what I'm absolutely willing to lose.
Right. Right. This is an entertainment chip.
Exactly right. All right. Anything else, Greg? I mean, listen, I guess we don't know. You know, I assume we don't pod Sunday. But this might be the end. We might turn the page to Phoenix. I don't know. But if we don't, if this is it, any final words on Powell?
Well, first of all, what a week. Yeah. Just in case.
Just in case.
Happy to say it again. Hopefully, I'm hoping I get an opportunity to say that again. But a big credit to Wyndham Clark for what he's done this week, really just today. Because I've kind of been out on him for a while. Since the U.S. Open victory, play has been a little up and down. Hasn't been a whole lot of things seeming to go in the right direction for him. And it's nice to know that his game is still there. And this kind of stuff is still capable. So really happy for Wyndham. Hope to see him play another round of golf. And it'd be great if he could close it out in 4 rounds.
Sounds good to me. All right. Producer Josh does all the hard work behind the scenes. Greg Ducharme available at The Real GFD. And you can find me at Rick Run Good. This has been The First Cut. We'll catch you next time.
Docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean and a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control all desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.